The boundaries have been broken.
Welcome to Vanguard Radio.
I believe that your primitive cerebrum kept trying to wake up. I'm your host for
The Truth Is No Defense.
Welcome to the broadcast. This is the 17th episode of The Truth Is No Defense. After Strange Gods is the title of a thin book of social criticism authored by T.S. Eliot, which was first delivered as a series of three lectures for an audience at the University of Virginia in 1934. Its themes were sober and weighty, heresy and tradition, orthodoxy and blasphemy, and the necessary prerequisite of racial and religious homogeneity for a healthy society. The topics were not so controversial for 1934, though, if spoken today at the University of Virginia, would surely bring on a firestorm of controversy. It, indeed, is both prophetic and relevant that this series of lectures were delivered at the University of Virginia, for no other institution has more manifested the bunkum which Eliot warned of in After Strange Gods. Indeed, this work is a suppressed piece of literature. So great has been the moral inversion since Eliot gave his lecture that it is now Eliot and the ideas expressed in After Strange Gods that are now heretical. Soon after its first publication, After Strange Gods was vilified as anti-Semitic and intolerant. The doubters were, and remain largely, Jews. And for that reason alone, it deserves our attention. After Strange Gods rejects what we now call multiculturalism in favor of a homogeneous society and one in which the morals of the state project the morals of the population. After Strange Gods argues that art and literature are to be judged by their adherence and construction upon an organic moral, artistic, and philosophical tradition. And for this reason, After Strange Gods also deserves our attention. Unfortunately, this work has been out of print for more than 65 years. The author himself withdrew the book from publication. His reasons for doing so are not entirely clear. Those hostile to the content in After Strange Gods alleged that Eliot was somehow shamed into withdrawing the work from publication. Most likely, though, his career was threatened, as are so many other men of prominence who defy Jewry. In any case, the work is rare. So tonight, I'd like to use this broadcast to familiarize listeners to Eliot's social criticism. Tonight, I'd like to summarize the themes explored by Eliot in After Strange Gods, alongside extended quotes from his book. My purpose tonight is to engage curious white nationalists, those with an interest in literature and intellectual history, those who wish to know more about a great man and his warnings for our civilization, that is, our race, which was in 1934 headed for disaster. It is important to begin tonight with a bit of historical background. The interwar period between 1918 and 1939 was a time of great societal disintegration and recombination. Liberal democracies, fascist and communist states tore apart the common culture of European society, a society which only years before had known confidence and supremacy for centuries. The Great War of 1914 to 1918 ripped apart that consensus, and it has yet to return. In After Strange Gods, Eliot begins by discussing the futility of argument and the pointlessness of debate in a broken world. Argument and debate that is incessantly manufactured by a popular press. Debate is designed to persuade and resolve. But Eliot asserts, in our society today, it only embitters. Quote, "In our time, controversy seems to me, on really fundamental matters, to be futile. It can only usefully be practiced where there is a common understanding. It requires common assumptions, and perhaps the assumptions that are only felt are more important than those that can be formulated. The acrimony which accompanies much debate is a symptom of differences so large that there is nothing to argue about. We experience such profound differences with some of our contemporaries that the nearest parallel is the difference between the mentality of one epoch and another. In a society like ours, worm-eaten with liberalism, the only thing possible for a person with strong convictions is to state a point of view and leave it at that." End quote. Exactly how a society forms a common understanding, that is, a consensus, is of great interest to Eliot. It is rootless cosmopolitanism that is to be deprecated, says Eliot. Men must have an understanding of themselves, their distinctiveness, their place, and their locality. It must be independent from others. Cosmopolitanism is the wrecker of tradition. Quote, "And you are hardly likely to develop a tradition where the bulk of the population is relatively so well off where it is that it has no incentive or pressure to move about. The population should be homogeneous. Where two or more cultures exist in the same place, they are likely to be either fiercely self-conscious or both to become adulterate. What is still more important is unity of religious background. And reasons of race and religion combine to make any large number of free-thinking Jews undesirable. There must be a proper balance between urban and rural, industrial and agricultural development, and a spirit of excessive tolerance is to be deprecated." End quote. Tradition and orthodoxy, as a filter for understanding, creating, and evaluating art and governing society, are also of paramount concern for Eliot. Tradition, argues Eliot, can be a good thing or a bad thing. It is not always a thing to be conserved. That is, the conservatism as a political philosophy is not universally applicable. Eliot asserts, quote, "Not only is it possible to conceive of a tradition being definitely bad, a good tradition might, in changing circumstances, become out of date. Tradition has not the means to criticize itself. It may perpetuate much that is trivial or of transient significance, as well as what is vital and permanent. And while tradition, being a matter of good habits, is necessarily real only in a social group. Orthodoxy exists whether realized in anyone's thought or not. Orthodoxy also, of course, represents a consensus between the living and the dead. End quote. Throughout After Strange Gods, Eliot refers to orthodoxy, in contrast to tradition, as something of the blood, of the kin, something immutable. I have come to understand Eliot's idea of orthodoxy is what we, as white nationalists, might call an ethnic genetic interest, or simply race. Eliot's orthodoxy is, after many readings of After Strange Gods, I've come to believe, the permanent collective racial interest which binds our race to generations past. Racial interests which are then reflected, whether opaquely or transparently, that is to say, negatively or positively, in our traditions. After defining tradition and orthodoxy, Eliot comes to terms with the subject of heresy and blasphemy. Tradition, in Eliot's time, almost exclusively existed within the context of Christianity. Even as late as the 1930s, it was still possible to conceive of Europe and the United States as a Christian civilization. Though Eliot had his doubts, this was still the case. In particular, whether blasphemy, a necessary component of a Christian society, was still operable. Quote, "No one today can possibly blaspheme, in any sense except that in which a parrot may be said to curse, unless he profoundly believes in that which he profanes. And when anyone who is not a believer is shocked by blasphemy, he is shocked merely by a breach of good form. And it is a nice question whether, being in a state of intellectual error, he is or is not committing a sin, and being shocked for reasons for the wrong. It is certainly my opinion that first-rate blasphemy is one of the rarest things in literature, for it requires both literary genius and profound faith, joined in a mind in a peculiar and unusual state of spiritual sickness." End quote. What Eliot suspected, before most others of his time, was that Christianity had been hollowed out. Hollowed out by liberalism and egalitarianism. Christianity, as an ordering principle and an instrument for understanding the world, had ended. There are many more themes in After Strange Gods which this broadcast could probe. The loss of reason and coherence to passion and emotion in literature, along with the rise of the unregenerate and conceited personality to that of one marked by internalization and restraint. T.S. Eliot also compares and contrasts the work of Ezra Pound, James Joyce, and D.H. Lawrence using the terms, as defined in After Strange God, of tradition and orthodoxy. Perhaps as white nationalists, the most important aspect of After Strange Gods is that it is Aryan, that is, Mr. Eliot, in this work of social criticism, approaches serious themes in the context of a tradition of European thought and critique centuries old. Importantly, After Strange Gods is free of obfuscation, tawdry toilet humor, and psychological hocus-pocus jargon. That, indeed, it is to say, After Strange God is free of Judaizers. Which is to say that it is lucid, it is coherent, and marked by specificity and elegance. Most of us know Eliot as the poet and playwright, and indeed, he is still honored as among the finest in the English language. But his social and literary criticism are today hardly known. Some bookstores still stock two other works of social criticism by Eliot, and they are Notes Towards the Definition of Culture and the Idea of a Christian Society. If you enjoy Eliot's work, please PM me from the forum, and I'll send you instructions on how to obtain After Strange Gods. In closing tonight, I'd like to play a clip from T.S. Eliot reading from his famous poem, The Wasteland.
What the thunder said after the torchlight red on sweaty faces, after the frosty silence in the gardens, after the agony in stony places, the shouting and the crying, prison and palace, and reverberation of thunder of spring over distant mountains. He who was living is now dead. We who were living are now dying with a little patience. Here is no water but only rock. Rock and no water and the sandy road, the road winding above among the mountains, which are mountains of rock without water. If there were water, we should stop and drink. Amongst the rock, one cannot stop or think. Sweat is dry and feet are in the sand. If there were only water amongst the rock, dead mountain mouse of carious teeth that cannot spit. Here one can neither stand nor lie nor sit. There is not even silence in the mountains, but dry, sterile thunder without rain. There is not even solitude in the mountains, but red, sullen faces sneer and snarl from doors of mud-cracked houses. If there were water and no rock, if there were rock and also water, and water, a spring, a pool among the rock, if there were the sound of water only, not the cicada and dry grass singing, but sound of water over a rock, where the hermit thrush sings in the pine trees, drip, drop, drip, drop, 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 drop.